So let's go back to where we started this series 3 weeks ago, how not to be a jerk face. We looked at how Jesus was put in the corner by the jerk face religious people, and they were trying to trip him up, and they asked him, what's the most important thing in the Bible, the Jewish scriptures? And here's what he says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment, and a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. So he says, I'm not going to give you one. I'm going to give you two. It does anything. Love God, love your neighbor. Now, loving God is difficult for me to understand. I am sort of a classic guy who, while I have emotions, I don't understand emotions that well. Love as an emotion, I struggle with a bit. Love as something that tells me what I should do to bless somebody or love somebody. Okay, I understand what I should do. So when God says love him, I go, I don't know what I do for God. I don't know how that works. God doesn't need me. He doesn't need any of us. God is sovereignly independent of all creation. And yet God wants a relationship with us. He wants that. But how I actually do something that says to God I love him, I have a hard time putting my mind around that. But when it comes to loving your neighbor, I go, okay, I can understand if it's not necessarily an emotional thing, I understand what I would do to love and express love that would be appreciated to neighbors. And these are commandments that God gives. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, strength, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You know, God never tells us to have commandments that come naturally. I mean, commandments are there because we wouldn't do them, right? He never says, thou shalt pass gas. Well, naturally, when we got gas, it'll come out. You know, don't have a commandment. He'll never say, here's my commandment, thou shalt breathe. No, we will breathe. He never has a commandment. A commandment says, you should take care of yourself. No, because we're going to look after numero uno, right? But he says things like, don't covet your neighbor's wife, don't steal, and love your neighbor as yourself. It is not natural to love your neighbor as yourself. It has to be a command. And this should be obvious. As we look at our country, neighbors aren't loving neighbors. We are more divided, more cantankerous than we've ever been. And it boils down to neighbors not loving neighbors. People who are right beside them. One of the encouraging things that I see as our church has gone to new locations is that more and more locations are like, oh my gosh, is the Crossroads coming in the neighborhood? Wonderful, amazing, awesome. Like when we went out to the east side of Cincinnati just recently, Union Township and county officials are like, oh my gosh, Crossroads. They rolled out the red carpet, were up for changing zoning or changing whatever they could because they wanted Crossroads to be their neighbor. They've seen what happens when we engage with kids who are challenged and tutor them so they have a better hope in a future. They've seen the way we support the work of other nonprofits that help people who are in poverty. They see how we actually bring an economy with us when we go someplace. They see how we actually strengthen marriage. And so they're like, come on out here. Similar with Mason. When Mason school boards for us to go and start in the Mason school district, they changed their bylaws because they wanted us there. No church had ever been there before. They changed them because they wanted us there, because they wanted us a neighbor. And that's because of the quality and caliber of people that you are, that we are, because when we go places, people are like, oh man, it's great that Crossroads is a neighbor. That's wonderful. Now, let's break that down a little bit. How great would it be if you were going to look for your first home to purchase or your second home to purchase, if people heard wind that, oh my gosh, this is a Crossroads person who might be moving on to our neighborhood. Oh my gosh, if someone from Crossroads actually lives in our neighborhood, this would be amazing because those people are great lovers. Appropriately. Those people, they go out of their way to serve their neighbors. Those people are just fun to be with. Those people are mindful. That would be amazing. How great would it be if you were in the neighborhood and you heard someone from Crossroads come and you say, oh my gosh, reputation is people there love their neighbors. This is a basic thing. This is what it should be like. And yet it isn't, because in our country, we need to remember there is a commandment to love your neighbor. In fact, we have books written about it because it's not done. It's actually a really good book. It's called The Art of Neighboring. And in this book, Jay Pathak says this: by becoming good neighbors, we become who we're supposed to be. As a result, our communities become the places that God intended them to be. You know, it's one thing to love somebody on the other side of the world who's impoverished and is up against affliction. And it's one thing, like, our hearts to go out and send money or whatever, do something like that. That's good. That's great. But it's another thing to actually love the person who's across the hall from our dorm. To actually love the person who's in the apartment above us. To actually love the person on the opposite end of the cul-de-sac. And it's hard to love them when we don't even know them. Melissa Dahl says this: according to a recent report from City Observatory, about 1/3 of Americans say they have never interacted with their neighbors. Never. 1/3 never interacted with their neighbors. That's 1/3 have never talked to them. What do you think the number is, those of us who don't love our neighbors? In the book, Being a Good Neighbor, or The Art of Neighboring, they had a fascinating diagram I want to share with you. Imagine you, where you live, your dorm room, your apartment, your house, whatever it is, in the middle of a sector and all the sectors around it. That all represents the people who are closest to your dorm room, your apartment, your house. Those houses. You can do this exercise at home, or you can already start thinking it through right now. So think about all the physical locations around you, and then in each of those locations, there may be up to 3 people living. Person A, B, or C. Husband, wife, child, roommates, whatever. My question for you is, how many of those squares could you fill in completely? How many do you know? I mean, do you know the names of the people who live 2 doors down from you? The names of the kids who live across the street from you? If you're an average American, you don't. Why? Because if you're an average American, you just don't care about your neighbors. You don't care about them, let alone you don't love them. This is a massive part of our problem. When many of us go buy a house, we go into this area that's sort of restricted, and it has what's called an HOA, a homeowners association. And that homeowners association tells us, or tells you, you can have a fence at this high, you can put something here, you can't do this, you gotta have, even I've even seen some or heard of some that say, you have to have your mulch out by this time or whatever. It's like, geez, you know, what's this mean? This means physically, if you need to do these things so that everybody is happy with you. And I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, who wants to live next door to somebody who has, you know, 3 discarded dishwashers in their front lawn? You know, there's something to that, right? But what would it be like for us to have a homeowner association where you, who wanted to be a good neighbor, said, what are the values that I, as a homeowner, as an apartment liver, as a dorm dweller, what are the values that I'm going to live by to be a great neighbor? I would submit there would be 4 rules if you want to be a great neighbor. 4 H's, actually. The first one would be helping. You would be up for helping your neighbor. You'd be up for that. You would do that. I'm kind of embarrassed that as I mentally go through those 8 squares around where our home is, I would have done better on that exercise when I was in Pittsburgh living with my parents in our first house on Evergreen or in our second house in Glen Eagle. I remember all the neighbors and all the names on Evergreen Drive when I was, you know, age 9. Remember them all. Why was that? Because we helped each other. I was sent on endless errands. Hey, go over to Mrs. Marcosi and borrow 2 eggs. Go to Mrs. Marcosi, I get these 2 eggs, I come back. When's the last time you asked a neighbor to borrow something? Hey, go over to Mrs. Winters and ask her if we can borrow her gallon of milk. Come over, do this. When's the last time someone came to your door, felt that you had an open door, that you were going to help them, and you would actually give them your milk or give them your cream or whatever it is? No, we'd rather go to Amazon and have them airdrop it on their back deck, like immediately. No, I'm not going to go talk to people. I'm not going to go depend on people. And because we're not depending on one another and we're not helping one another, we're losing love. We're losing connection with one another. We don't have the opportunity to love one another. I'm in the middle of neighborhood swapping. I've been in the one house I've been in for 15 years, and Lib and I, different phase of life and stuff I've talked about before. We're moving to another place about 10 minutes away or so. And so right in between, you know, two neighborhoods, and I'm going to this new neighborhood, and it's kind of odd. My current neighborhood, my old neighborhood, I live right next door to Brian Wells, who was a Crossroads before me, as actually part of the search team that offered me the job as a church founder and senior pastor, and he's a current board member, and he used to be on staff as well. So he's right next door to my right. I'm going to a new place, who on the other side of the street lives our executive pastor, Darren Yates. And I've had people come up in both situations. First, like, Brian Wells, how's that going to be like you living beside Brian Wells? I mean, man. And now, same thing. Darren Yates, you're going to live across the street of somebody who works for you. Oh, man, that could be weird. No, what's weird is you would think that's weird. That's what's weird. What's weird is you would think that I can't actually love people I'm around in other situations. That you would think that if I go to a house, I'm going like, I'm there as my castle saying, no one come here. Because we're treating our houses this way, if you have a house. It's been called the decking of America. We're going to our backyards, getting massive decks, privacy fences, and we used to have a nice big porch in the front where we could see people walking by. Hey, Jim, you want to come up and have some lemonade or something? We used to do that. No, we don't do it anymore. We don't want to be in front. We don't want to talk to people. No, we want to get to the back. Go way back there. Stay private. My gosh, most of us don't even know what our neighbors look like. In the morning, they get inside of their car and they're automatic door comes up, and they come out in their tinted windows, and away they go. And then at the end of the day, they come back in their tinted windows, and the door comes up, and they go in, and you're like, I think someone lives there. I think someone lives there. In fact, we even feel like, okay, this person's coming. I don't even want to wave. They might think I'm weird or something like that, just waving. How can we love our neighbors when it feels odd to wave? One of the things to do is to actually help our neighbors. Neighbor beside me right now on the left is Dan. It was a bummer, major, major value add to have great neighbors. And man, we would call Dan up sometimes out of nowhere and say, hey, we aren't going to be able to get home in time. Can you let Winston out? Sure. Goes over the house, lets Winston out. Other side, they have the Wells, and they had a dog that was just old. I mean, Moose was old, just tumors on his knees, old chocolate lab, just blind. So, I mean, you couldn't just let someone watch him, right? So we would go over because he kind of knew us, and he would come, and we'd have to lead this blind dog down over the porch steps so he wouldn't fall over and do his thing. And we would do that for a week at a time, and they'd do that for us for a week at a time. That was helping, right? That was a form of loving. I've gotten soup from Dan. Just makes soup or has amazing parties. Me, if you're my neighbor, you're in luck. Any tool you need, I got you covered. Step ladders, caulking guns. My first time in the new house, my neighbor said, hey, I see you have a pickup truck. You mind if I use it to take something to the dump? Sure. Absolutely. Take my pickup truck. I mean, that's part of what we do is we help one another. We team up with one another. This is part of what loving is. We are so isolated that we don't leverage one of the things that's true in everything that's observable, and that is teamwork is more potent than two individuals. If you had 3 hours of yard work and your neighbor had 3 hours of yard work, if you both teamed up and said, let's do my yard and then we'll go do your yard, you would get it done, everything done in 2 hours. There's something about the power of being with somebody and teaming up and motivating each other. Larger, awkward things can be done quicker with two people. It's powerful with that. Brian Wells and I, we started really teaming up on a variety of things. Like, we needed a lawnmower. Both of us had a lawnmower conk out about the same time. We started realizing, why would we buy two lawnmowers? Let's buy one lawnmower. Let's put the cost And, you know, we'll make it go that way. And depending on one another, our love for one another increases. If you want to love your neighbors, try to figure out how you can help them. My in-laws who were looking to have live with us some point here, one of the reasons they're not totally heading down right now, though we're ready for them, is because they've got these neighbors that are so thankful that they're in the neighborhood, they're doing everything for them. They're mowing all their lawn, they're mowing their lawn, shoveling their stuff, because Roger and Sally have brought value to that neighborhood. They have loved their neighbors before they started to kind of lose it physically, and everyone wants them in the neighborhood because, man, we need them here, because they have been amazing lovers of their neighbors. I'll tell you what, the day you start loving your neighbor as yourself, which means doing for them things you have to do in your own yard or do in your own space, that's a time where you start making traction. So helping. Number two, honoring. If you were going to love your neighbor as yourself, and you're one of your HOA principles wouldn't just be to help, it would be to honor. It's an old psychologist. His name is Gary Smalley. He tries to help men and women who are in struggling marriages come to a better place and honor one another. And I remember his definition of honor from a long time ago that still works today. He said, honor, it's when someone walks in the room and you go, ah, oh, I like that. Someone walks in, it's kind of why a lot of us love dogs, right? We love dogs. We come home, the dog goes, wag his butt around. And then we like go in another room for 20 minutes and you come in the new room, he goes, again. He's all happy, you know? What would it look like if, whenever you were outside, instead of looking at somebody in the other yard going like, okay, if I waved to him, is he going to think I'm a pervert? Like, okay, instead of like, if you went, hey, how are you? How are you doing today? That's honor. Hey, it's amazing to see you. Honor. That's how you can remember what honor is. Honor. It's just, you're excited to see somebody. Hey, how are you? We feel loved when someone honors us. They're excited to see us. Your parents, your neighbors feel that way around you. Is there that breath of honor? Romans 12:10 says, love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Hey, there's a competition. Instead of being competitive with who has the nicer car and the nicer stuff, what would it look like for us to be competing with one another and showing each other more honor? That's an amazing neighborhood to be in right there. Outdo one another with showing honor. And it says here to do it with brotherly affection. The word here in the Greek is the word literally Philadelphia, which is why we refer to Philadelphia as Filthydelphia. Excuse me, why we refer to Philadelphia as the city of brotherly love. Chuck Mingo wearing an Eagles. I'm going to pound him into applesauce next weekend, or 2 weeks, whenever it is. Next week, I'm going to pound him into applesauce. But that's what Philadelphia is, and God says, let's love our neighbors, each other, with brotherly affection. Let's outdo one another's. And when we honor somebody, this means we honor their wishes. We honor, if they don't want us to do a three-point turn in their driveway, we don't do a three-point turn in their driveway. We honor their wishes. If they appreciate everything being picked up in our yard and we don't mind if some stuff's being left, we bring stuff in because we want to honor their wishes. We want them to honor our wishes. That's what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. I haven't always been great at this. When Liv and I came from Pittsburgh here to Cincinnati to help start Crossroads, we moved in, and we had just moved out in Pittsburgh of a house that I had built myself. I built it with my own two hands. I built this house, and it was a little house, but we had some land, and there was some woods around it, and the houses that were out also had some woods around them. And this was like this for two houses previous that we had, so it was no big deal for us to open our door, and our dog at that point was Job, and just let Job out and do his deal, and he wanders around and does his business, and then he comes back in. Oh, it's here, good. And just never thought anything of that at all. Real obedient dog, just wild, he goes, okay, oh, where's your, and you open the door, and there he is, right? So we come to Cincinnati, and And we go, well, we didn't think, what's our dog philosophy in Cincinnati? We just kept doing what we did. So we were in this apartment on Erie Avenue, in city limits, four-lane road, and we chose this apartment because they would take dogs. And we'd open up, and Job would go out and go wherever he goes, whatever, and kind of, oh, Job. And sometime later, one of our neighbors, an older guy, came and said, hey, Brian, can I talk to you? My grandson was out playing, and he slipped on your dog's turd, and he got it all up the side of him, and I'm just not really happy about it. I just wanted to tell you about that. And I was horrified. I was like, oh, gosh, what an idiot I am. Never thought of it. What's he really bothered about? Is he bothered that of the clean job of extracting poop from clothes, perhaps? Okay. What's really bothersome there is when that happens, the first thing someone thinks about, that person doesn't even care about me. That person is just dishonoring me. That person is not thinking about me at all. So to honor somebody means we communicate, I'm thinking about you. I'm thinking about you, and I want the best for you. Ephesians 4:25 says, therefore, having put away all falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Speaking the truth with his neighbor. Sometimes someone comes up to me and says, hey, I just like to speak the truth to you in love. I just want to give you some truth in love. And when that happens, I go like this. Okay, what is it? At least when Christians talk about speaking the truth in love, what it means normally is, I'm going to say something that's going to sting, but you really need to hear it. That's kind of the undercurrent with it. That's not what's being said here. And that's fine to say something that's going to sting every once in a while. There's nothing wrong with that. The thing that's what's wrong is if we think that's the only way that we speak the truth in love. How about this? How about you go tell your neighbors when you get home today, hey, I was just thinking, I'm really thankful to have you as a neighbor. You've been a great neighbor for me. That would be speaking the truth in love. What would happen if the truth was you next time you saw your neighbor out, you said, hey, I just wanted you to know, I really appreciate you, and if there's anything I can do to make your yard work or your painting, if you're going to repaint the inside of your apartment, I'd love to help you with that because I'm really thankful for you and I living close together. That would be showing love to our neighbor because we are one with one another, and when we're one with one another, we're in tune with the third H, harmony. Harmony. Harmony happens when there are different tones that come together to form a beautiful sound. Different pitches, different keys, whatever. I'm not getting the right musical stuff right, but you know what I'm talking about. They come together and make a beautiful thing. Different stuff. Neighborhoods are great neighborhoods when different people come together and make harmony. Apartment buildings are great apartment buildings when different people come together to make harmony. But we have to celebrate and recognize that other people are different than us. And we have to look for times to actually be together. I am, if you said, Brian, are you a conservative Christian? I would have to ask you, well, I don't know, define conservative. And then I'd have to ask you, define Christian. I mean, define those things, and, you know, then I'll tell you if I am or not. But there was a day when I absolutely would have said, absolutely, I am a conservative Christian. That day would have been, 20 years or so, something like that ago. And in those days, I would just swallow whole anything sort of Christian culture said and say, okay, I got to do that. And one of those things in the 80s people got in this big kick on was hating Halloween. Can't do Halloween, you know, because that's when kidnappings happen and Satan worshiping and all those kinds of stuff. It was a huge, huge misinformation campaign. It's a lot of bad information and conservative Christians being really afraid and just wanting to be against the world. And so everyone's like abandoning their houses and boycotting Halloween. Of course, when I was a kid, if I show up to your house and you didn't give me candy, you were getting your window soaped, you know. It really, really bothered me then. But then all of a sudden, I became a dog. I was like, yeah, Halloween. I'm not doing Halloween. I'm not going to buy candy. And then when I moved to Cincinnati, all of a sudden Halloween got redeemed because neighbors are talking with one another. Neighbors who never see each other, kids who never talk to adults on the other side of the street, getting free candy. And so we just started this tradition. We participated in one neighborhood and then just continued in every neighborhood we've been in since where, man, we bring out the fire pit in the front And people come out, we have some food, some munchies, we have a cooler of various beverages, and just neighbors come and just hang around this little fire, and they actually bring their candy, and so as a new troop of kids come down, we give them their candies. In the process, we actually are creating harmony with one another. People who wouldn't normally socialize with one another, we wouldn't necessarily opt into their best friend group because we're not exactly alike, but we've come into a place of harmony. This is what makes a great neighbor, is when you can learn to live really well with someone who's different than you, who has different attitudes, different values, different practices. Colossians 3:14 says, "If one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony." Binds everything together in perfect harmony. This harmony doesn't happen when we complain. We complain, it's like, "Yeah, did you hear Joe over there? Oh, I can't believe he's doing blah, 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 blah," or complaining. "Oh, I can't believe their grass is so loud. Blah, 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 blah. I can't believe she plays her stereo so loud. Doesn't she understand? I'm right below her. Oh, I can't believe it." We're complaining, and it never sounds good. We never harmonize. What happens, though, when we forgive, when we let things go? And that doesn't mean we wait for our neighbors to tell us how stupid they were, and then we forgive them. It means that we voluntarily just let it go. Just forgive. Just release it. Say, "I'm not going to get upset about that person doing a three-point turn on my driveway and going on the corner of my grass. I'm going to release it. I'm going to forgive it. I'm not going to get upset about loaning out the caulk gun and it coming back with caulk smeared all over it. C-A-U-L-K, smeared all over it. I'm not going to get all upset about that." That is what's called living in harmony. And the reason why we have more neighborhoods that are not living in harmony is because we don't have enough neighbors who live in humility. It's a fourth H, humility. Humility. Humility is taking the humble posture. Jesus was the ultimate in humility. He goes from heaven, the Bible says, goes from heaven where he's being served by angels, fed grapes by hand, or whatever's happening up there. Goes there, comes down to the earth. Right there, it's a humble move. He comes down to the earth. And when he comes down to the earth, he takes a humble existence here on earth. The book of John, the New Testament, John 1, chapter 1, verse 1 and following says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. In him and through him, all things move and have their meaning." It's the best translation, I think, of that passage. But in the message, a different version of it, they try to put some flavor into it. It says, "In the beginning, God came and dwelled in our neighborhood." God came and dwelled. Imagine God living in your neighborhood. So what happened when Jesus came to the earth? He dwelt in our neighborhood. And the way he treated people is not the way we treat people. It's not the way jerk faces treat people. Eric Schwitzgebel says this, jerks see the world through goggles that dim others' humanity. The server at the restaurant is not a potentially interesting person with a distinctive personality, life story, and set of goals to which you might possibly relate. Instead, he is merely a tool by which to secure a meal or a fool on which you can vent your anger. The people ahead of you at Starbucks are faceless and of no account. Those beneath you in the social hierarchy lack your talents and deserve to get the scut work. Well, jerk faces cannot be humble. Jerk faces cannot be great neighbors because they think they're better than their neighbors. Whether their neighbor is in the house beside them, their neighbor is driving in the car beside them, their neighbor is sitting in the booth next to them, there's this, you know, You me. And humility is when you humble yourself just like Jesus did and you lower yourself to get underneath people. The day you start getting underneath people, it's the day you'll be a great neighbor. It's the day you'll be a great lover. It's the day. It's the day that your neighborhood will start to look different and your neighborhood will start to be better. If you do anything in reading of leadership, you know, one of the buzzwords in leadership is being a servant leader. I want to be a servant leader. Really what these people are often saying or should be saying is, I don't necessarily want to be a servant leader. I just want to appear like a servant leader. I just want people to think that I'm, I don't even want to be humble. I just want to look like I'm humble. The ultimate servant leader, the first servant leader in all of history that was noteworthy was Jesus. He was the first one, and he's been the best one, a servant leader, on and on and on and on. How do you know if you're a servant leader, that you're coming under people, fueling people's dreams? How do you really know if you're living up the bar of being a servant? Where Jesus did this, even when he was living, he would get down on his knees as a servant at his last meal before he was crucified, and he washed the dung off of the feet of the disciples at the Last Supper. They're all looking around going, Where's the hired help? Where's the servants? No one's there. They start getting nervous because the normal thing is you'd walk and you'd have these Birkenstock things and there's camels and camel leave behind everywhere. And you got to have servants to clean that up. And Jesus goes, I'll do it. He lowers himself. He humbles himself. And he cleans their feet. Because he's a servant. And the key to you knowing whether or not you're a servant is a very simple test. How do you act when someone treats you like one? When you're treated like a servant, when you're treated like dirt, when you're treated like not as honorable as somebody else, how do you react? Many neighborhoods, we take it personally when someone does X, Y, Z. Maybe it wasn't personal to me. Maybe that's just what they did and they weren't really thinking about me. And if I overreact here, it's an example of me actually not serving them, not going the extra mile. Person cuts me off in traffic. Oh, they're trying to. Maybe they just were zoning out and they just changed lanes and they weren't trying to jerk you over. And we can say, as a humble person who wants to love our neighbor, yes, our neighbor is the person that we can see in the car beside us. Yes, that is our neighbor. Maybe we can humble and humble ourselves and say, I'll let you get through the light ahead of me. I'll let you merge ahead of me. Wow. Wow, that would be crazy. But my gosh, we have road rage and all other sorts of things. You know who would be the greatest neighbor? Just sometimes I have neighbor fantasy. You ever have neighbor fantasy? I think, who would be great to have as a neighbor? You know, it'd be interesting. That's interesting. Ice-breaking question for you if you want to go out and have a meal with somebody. Who would you love to be a neighbor with? I'll tell you who would be a dream neighbor. Can't be a neighbor with her because she's dead now, but if she was alive, who'd be a great neighbor would be Mother Teresa. Amazing. Not that you would want to be your neighbor in Calcutta. I've been to Calcutta a couple times. God loves people in Calcutta. I just don't love Calcutta. It is tough, tough living, which is why she had such a powerful life. So I wouldn't want to be her neighbor in Calcutta, but if she ever came to the States, I would love her to be right next door to me. Why? Because she was an amazingly humble woman. Here's what she said about humility. These are the few ways we can practice humility. To speak as little as possible of oneself. To mind one's own business. Not to want to manage other people's affairs, to avoid curiosity, to accept contradictions and correction cheerfully, to pass over the mistakes of others, to accept insults and injuries, to accept being slighted, forgotten, and disliked, to be kind and gentle even under provocation, and never to stand on one's dignity, to choose always the hardest. That's why that was a great woman. And that's why we need to be humble. And if we're humble, we're going to be great, great neighbors. Jesus gives another clue in humility in one of his teachings in the book of Luke 6. I'll read this for you. He says, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you, and to one who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from one who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who begs from you, and from one who takes away your goods, do not demand them back. And as you wish that others would do to you, so do to them. He says here, turn the other cheek. We hear about turn the other cheek all the time. Turn the other cheek, I've heard pacifists use to describe, this is why we should be pacifist and we should never be violent. It's not what this passage is speaking about. Another time, Jesus says, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other one as well. To get slapped on the right cheek doesn't mean you've gotten punched, because most of us are right-handed. He specifically calls out right cheek because the right cheek is a backhand cheek. It's like a backhand. And what's a backhand slap? It's an insult. He's talking about insults here. He says, if somebody insults you, he's not saying if someone comes and accosts you physically to go, oh, I'll let you beat me into a pulp. He's not saying that. He's saying if somebody comes and backhands you and insults you, you should have such dignity and such humility that their insult doesn't really bother you, so you turn the other cheek. So you want to say something else bad about me? That's fine. Turn the other cheek. We can turn the other cheek for our neighbors. What's that look like? Oh my gosh, that person just did a 3-point turn on my driveway. They went in the corner of the grass. It's all right. If they do on the other side next time, it'll be even. Fine. Oh my gosh, that person borrowed my shovel and they haven't brought it back yet. Maybe you should call them. Or maybe, fine, they could take the rake as well. Maybe take the rake as well. Turn the other cheek. Oh my gosh, the person is parking again. Well, why are they parking the street, making it hard for me to get by them? I don't understand. They have a driveway. They have a garage. Why are they going on the street? I gotta go. Well, what is wrong with these people? Yeah, turn the other cheek. That's even fine by me if they park a little further out in the street, because it just takes me an extra 2 seconds to maneuver by, and I'm fine. I actually pull my rearview mirror in, and it's all good. If we were humble people, if we were loving our neighbors, these nitpicky things wouldn't bother us the way they do. Somebody has to start loving their neighbor. Somebody has to start stepping out from the isolated, judgmental milieu that's called normal American culture. And who should those people be? You and I. That's who those people should be, you and I. The day you start loving your neighbor is the day you start changing the world. Stop thinking about inventing the iPhone changes the world. Steve Jobs gave us the iPhone, and everybody who was close to him couldn't stand him. His biography that he authorized made that abundantly clear. He didn't elevate the game of anybody around him. You can do that as you love your neighbor, as you bring your love to people around you. Now, as we leave and get ready to end this entire series, we're going to give you something as you walk out here today. It's a little sticker that says, don't be a jerk face. Is what that says. Let me tell you what you're not going to do with this sticker. You're not going to put it on your bumper. This is not like a warning to everyone around you, don't be a jerk face. This is for your personal growth. You could put it on your steering wheel, telling you, don't be a jerk face, let the guy in. You could put it on your laptop, so every time you open, you see it go, don't be a jerk face. You can put it on your front door, facing inward. So before you open up the door, this is for you, because we should be such amazingly great neighbors who aren't jerk faces that we should be elevating the game of everyone around us, and they should be thankful that you're in your life versus not knowing your name. And by the way, if your neighbors don't know your name, guess what? You haven't been. You haven't been a good neighbor because you've been irrelevant to them. Loving our neighbor not only means we know their names, but they know ours, because all of us know the people who love us. We're going to do a song that we did before. Again, it's called Reckless Love. And it's a powerful song that is important for us to see this is the kind of love God has. The dictionary definition of reckless says this. It says, utterly unconcerned about the consequences of some action, without conscience, without caution, careless even. God just said, I'm coming down to heaven. I'm coming down to earth. I'm coming down. I don't care if it costs my son his life. I don't care if it costs me my life. I'm coming down. And for us to start loving our neighbor, we need to start having more of that recklessness. I'm just going to shovel my neighbor's sidewalk, even if they think that I'm weird. I'm just going to, whatever, reckless love, because that's the kind of love God has for us. God, Thank you for our time and for your love, the modeling of your greatness. And we just want to right now say to you, God, we appreciate your reckless love. Amen. Let's stand and do this together one more time as a way to have this bolted to our conscience and to our hearts.
Down, coming after me. There's no shadow.